Johnny, I can't get over you. So the old standards were songs like that, but in this day and age, it's difficult to remember those things because
Need to go back to this day and age. We can actually go way back to the days that were much better.
Damn right.
That's what we could do.
Damn right. But I mean, corded phones. Imagine standing in one spot when a corded phone was.
Well, then they had to extend the extension cord. You could wrap around the corner. You're almost private,
that was
right?
Technology.
First cell phone. I need to light this in there.
Go ahead, light it. Light it if you like. Oh, there you go.
Am I keeping it back?
No. We started already.
And you don't have to worry about, do I have to carry a punch? You don't have to worry about carrying a punch around. You know, some people
care. No. That's,
carry the right tools for.
My father smoked cigars until the day he died. I have 10 a day for 45 years. 10 a day for 45 years. It's just what I enjoy. So.
10 a day?
This is number 5, and it's 1 o'clock. So
you grew up around cigars. Mm-hmm. What was your philosophy? Did you dislike them as a child? Did you enjoy them?
The house was filled with it.
So you enjoyed it?
I just enjoy it. I can't stand cigarettes. I loathe cigarettes. I think they're hideous things. But I tolerate them, and people smoke aboard. But I just love cigars. I just like them. So is this thing on?
It's on.
Oh, Christ.
Hang on one sec. So, we're getting ahead of ourselves, Jonathan, there.
Yeah, sure. Of course.
No, we actually are not in the studio today. John, our guest today, made quite the suggestion, and I jumped all over it. I was very happy to hear it when you said that.
Oh, sorry.
Why don't you come to the boat, and we just set up the cameras, and he thought it was going to be an iPhone.
Mm. It's much more of a production. It's very professional.
We try to be. But I think people are going to quickly learn. We're not going to do the standard kind of TCL show here. We're doing a show that's The Construction Life. We're doing a show that's People First. And mm-hmm. Jonathan has his own show. And we've got along really well. And then I knew about you, John, probably going on a year or two now, I think.
Possibly. I've been a quiet admirer for, I think, as long as you've been on.
Yeah.
But
you've been quiet. You've been quiet about it.
Well, I just admire and applaud and like. I guess that's how we applaud on Instagram. We hit like.
Right.
We have my neighbor coming out with his yacht, but he is he's very gentle going by, so there won't be any wake.
Well, there might be a little bit, but that's fine.
Mr. Lozon, he has a car dealership in Montreal, and that's his yacht, so maybe you'll see him going by.
So this is... I don't even want to call this show anything. We're just going to discuss your history, where you came from, what you're doing right now, currently. You're still on the job site. You're still talking to tradespeople. You're still working with clients. You're still engaging. And what I love about it is that you're engaging with work that should be the norm. It's not
the norm. Well, there's a philosophy behind. Well, as much as you can. I mean, obviously, not to... not to sound morbid, but really you get to a point in life where you realize it's your duty to preserve what we have for the next generation to enjoy, and that's what I try and do. That was my father's philosophy. He comes from a shipbuilding family for 900 years. I was born and raised in boat building. And his philosophy was always that you have to teach the next generation. We enjoy the Roman Colosseum, and we enjoy all the beautiful architecture in the world simply because somebody else long gone preserved it. Mm. And it's our duty to preserve it. And in the trades in this day and age, there's not an app for everything. You need hands-on.
Yes, very much.
You need to know how to carve something, how to cut something, because everything's CNC, and I deplore the CNC machines in this day and age, because nobody's actually really cutting anything anymore and making stuff. And that's, so it's all part of the philosophy of preservation.
Is it connected to economics?
Of course it is.
So the generation of today that's looking at certain projects, when they look at them, if they were to go the old school route and go the hand carve, go the hands on, they would not be able to survive economically. Is that the idea?
I don't think so, except it really, I guess it really depends on what you're doing. If you're mass producing kitchen cabinets, if you're if your goal is to, you know, make 10 kitchens a month or 50 kitchens a month, you need CNC machines to do automation. Different. But if you just want to create custom, which is what I do, I like to take a home and create something.
How many kitchens do you see, if they are mass-produced, do you appreciate?
No, you don't, no.
That's what I'm saying, is you don't appreciate. When I see some of your posts and when you actually, and I love it, by the way, when you give the commentary to the posts, I wish you'd do every post that way. Because I love the commentary that's associated with it. I could already see it when I'm seeing the posts and I'm understanding where you're going with it. But then you
that's very kind.
You drop little hints of history, which I absolutely appreciate, because there is a purpose behind why we do certain things.
Of course there is. Yeah.
There has to be. But I agree with you that today it's been lost. It's been lost because of the almighty dollar.
Purpose-driven is everything. I know a lot of dead millionaires, and they had no purpose. They made money, but
you didn't leave anything. You didn't leave a purpose.
No, you have to have a purpose in life and share your knowledge. And as I always say, preserve what you have for the next generation to enjoy. And that's not my quote. It is my father's quote.
How do you stay humble to that, John? Like, you know, you've lived for 40 plus years.
Well, I grew up in the business.
I know you grew up in this. And
not
sometimes
in a business so much as a craft.
Sure, and sometimes it becomes really easy to become incubated and distracted by other things, yet you remain humble and committed to preserving the craft.
Well, because that's what I enjoy. Any artist does that. I mean, you can either choose to make a lot of money and for money's sake, or you can just enjoy what you do, and you've got to enjoy what you do, and that's authenticity. You have to...
Is there a balance, though?
Of course there is, but it's not balance. People screw up work-life balance. Ooh. No, there's no balance. It's called harmony. Harmony.
So it's finding the harmony.
Yes. I work like a horse. I work very hard because I enjoy it until the body starts failing a bit and you take some time off. But that is the harmony. Right there. If you enjoy what you do. I've never worked a day in my life, put it that way. I've never worked a day in my life because I enjoy what I do, or I wouldn't do it. Simple as that.
Do you get a lot of the younger people that get into this industry or any kind of craft? I like grouping it all together, whether it's wood carving, woodworking, construction, just anything to do with creativity with your hands and your mind. Do you get a lot of the younger generation reaching out to you to discuss how to achieve that? Because
yes.
I don't think that they know how to achieve it without being a digital connection to achieve it. And that's, I agree with you. I love that at the beginning of the show, you just started talking about there isn't an app for everything in construction.
No, there isn't. No. No. And when you get working on historic homes, which is the bulk of my work, because I've chosen to do that, then you realize it's very humbling because you see things that were done 200 years ago, which is old for this country, that you can't do today. You know, stone foundations and things like that. Mm. Like everything they did. You have to preserve that. You're looking at timbers that were hand cut and hand split, and we're bitching because a table saw, you know, doesn't work or something. Right? You just have to learn what they did and learn from it. And it is humbling because you get to see things that they did that we really couldn't do today because it would take such great physical strength.
So what do you share with somebody who wants to get into the industry then? Today.
What do I share?
What do you want them to know?
Well, first of all, study history.
Ooh.
Historical architecture.
You have to look back.
You have to look back.
You have to.
We built monoliths and things, you know, 2,000, 3,000 years ago. That, and beyond. We won't get into Egypt and everything else because that's another subject. But they built things that we really couldn't duplicate today, and it was all by hand. I remember talking to archaeological academic once, and he worked out of the Acropolis, and they were trying to reproduce sections, and they realized that every stacked stone on the columns was not the same because they used whatever stones they had. He was thinking, we're just going to cast one stone and stack them up and it'll be great. No. Everyone is a different size, everyone is a different height, and it's all stacked up, hand done, every bit of it, and yet when you stand back, it looks uniform. And the other thing he had to correct was the stupidity of putting modern technology into this. So where these stone beams were connected together, they were crumbling. And so they put steel I-beams in. Well, the steel expands and contracts in the cold, and it was actually cracking and fracturing the stone. so you can't apply modern technology to everything.
I go back to the dollar. I go back to...
Yes.
Okay, we can look back in history and we can see that certain structures were built a certain way. But even if you were to go back to the turn of the century and you where the skyscraper started, workers were paid a certain fee, and it wasn't low, it wasn't high. It was a fair fee for their skill level. And they created,
it was a living wage.
It was a living wage. And they created these structures. They were part of these structures. Mm. What I miss in today's construction, there is no pride in what people are building today.
No. Crank it up. Just crank it up.
Crank it out and get it out and move on to the next one.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's all dollar driven.
Okay, but is that driven from the corporations at the top, from the businesses?
100%. I think right? So.
But go back one step further. It's driven by the need to produce because our cost of living is outrageous.
Okay. Yes.
It's outrageous. People are forced to produce. You know, when we were kids, there was no iPhone bills to pay for. There was thousands and thousands of dollars we spent on this. That we spend
streaming
all this money.
Services, taxis, all Ubers. We just food. You,
somebody could work a job, minimum wage, save money to buy a car, buy a house, and survive. Not today.
You can achieve. It's funny. On the drive up here, we were actually discussing that. We were trying to figure out how this generation is actually going to own home ownership. How are they
going? It's not going to happen unless they reduce taxation completely. And nobody making minimum wage or $18 or $20 or $25 an hour should be paying any income tax, period. Because you're taxed to death on everything. Somebody from the Fraser Institute sent me a link about how you take $100 of your money and the government takes $33 in tax.
You've seen that?
Yes. And then you buy fuel.
Yes.
And that's another $40 in tax with the remaining $70. You then have $30-odd left of your $100 that's been taxed. It's outrageous. Do we have an appreciable increase in lifestyle? No. We have debt. We have people that can't afford to live in their homes. I see it in the trades. I know people in 2019 that were paying $1,000 and $1,100 a month rent are all of a sudden paying $2,000 now.
Yes, we saw the skyrocket.
And they can't afford to live.
And they can't afford to live. And then you get
out.
You get the landlord-tenant disputes that are going on. You get tenants doing what they're doing. You get landlords doing what they're doing. So, but that's a causation. That's a reaction.
Government caused it,
yes,
in my opinion.
That's the reason why.
Period. That is just... To me, that's the causation. They have caused
Do we have
the
cost a fan? Of living. We have a fan.
Hi, Jean.
No, I love that you made the suggestion. And obviously, if anybody's not watching yet, we're on a boat. On your boat.
And there's a dear friend, a dear neighbor over there, Jean-Francois. Jean is actually a retired politician. He was a councillor in Gatineau. And he ran for mayor and didn't win. But he's retired from that now. But he's a good chap. He understands everything we're talking about, and he tried to make a difference, and it didn't work.
So, John, is being a tradesperson today, is it a smart move?
Of course it is, because if you're good in anything in life, you will succeed. But don't expect instant easy money. You have to adapt, improvise, and adapt.
You have to work for it. You have to figure out how to
and know your market and know. Put it this way: if you want to make horseshoes today, you're going to fail, unless you make horseshoes for the King's Plate or for specialized person. Yes. So you've got to specialize. If you choose to make horseshoes, you know, in downtown Toronto, you're not going to do well. But so there's that aspect of it. There has to be some common sense.
Those shoes are made to be thrown at certain people.
That's right, yes. But you might actually have a great craft, and you might be good at it. The other thing is you could adapt and say, you know, I know how to forge iron ore into this. Maybe I'll also branch out and do hand railings and things like that.
That's a good point.
Like, I grew up as a boat builder. So a boat has... stairs, flooring, kitchen cabinets, doors, windows, everything that you'd have in a home. So it was easy for my father and myself to transition to terrestrial. And now, I make circular stairs. I make anything curves. I love doing church doors and windows and things because it's the same principles. There's curves. I love to throw curves and things. But my point is, you can be good at something, but you might fail economically because there's no demand for it. So you have to adapt and bring your craft or your philosophy to it. Does that make sense?
It does. It makes sense.
Meet Jonathan Sinelli, the visionary behind People First Leadership. Jonathan is not your average leadership coach. His people-first leadership approach focuses on putting people at the core of your strategy, creating workplaces where teams thrive and achieve outstanding results. What sets him apart? Jonathan is a master at asking thought-provoking questions that spark genuine conversations and challenge conventional thinking. His deep empathy helps him understand unique challenges and guide people toward impactful solutions. As an accomplished author, media host of the People First podcast, and seasoned project management expert with a background as an electrician, Jonathan offers unparalleled experience and practical insights. Whether you're interested in a one-on-one coaching or breakout room sessions, Jonathan customizes his approach to your needs. He also travels the world, speaking at conferences and business events, inspiring leaders with his dynamic presentations. Discover how people-first leadership can transform your approach and ignite your team's potential with Jonathan Sinelli. Call Jonathan at 416-717-4139 or email him at jc@jonathansinelli.com or reach out to him on his website at jonathansinelli.com. This message is proudly supported by the Construction Life Podcast.
Yeah, I actually love what you said because I think the flip side of the spectrum occurs where it's like, I'm in construction and I'm going to do everything, right? I'm going to be that GC or I'll make kitchens for everybody. And what you're saying is, hang on a second. Yeah. Like, know what your market is.
I can't compete with IKEA. Know
who you're competing against, right?
Well, it's funny you bring up the kitchen argument because I was at an event recently and an established kitchen maker, old school, father business, they had the fortunate luck of having a TV show with the dad, and it was all centered around the dad. Unfortunately, the dad passed through the production process of doing the show. Obviously, the broadcaster was asking them to continue doing the show. Mm. The sons all felt, no, this business was built off my dad. My dad's no longer here. We don't want to do the show anymore. They kept it. They were always kitchen makers. They're all old school. And I saw them recently, and they just said, we've never seen this industry so bad. We can't compete with how poorly efficient the industry has become. And like you said, and I actually said the same thing, it echoes it. I said you need to adapt. You guys have a certain set of skills. Yeah. And it's whether you want to compete with what's already being built, i.e. IKEA or whatever, or do you want to continue down the same road and find the clients that will appreciate the quality of work that you want to produce?
Precisely.
It's more challenging that way.
It comes down to having an interview with your prospective client first. And when they show me a magazine photo and say, I want this and this and this and this and this, and if I see everything's mass-produced, it's Home Depot trims, it's kitchens, it's furnishings from a catalog, from Wayfair or whatever, I say, you don't need me. If you want something made, prime example, I had a client about probably 15 years ago, and he went to Costco, and they had the most beautifully, elaborately carved serpentine vanity, and it was 6 feet long. Serpentine doors are the two S-shaped doors that come together. Beautiful. Obviously made overseas. It was $1,100. He said, I want that, but this one is freestanding. I want mine built in, and I want it 7 feet long. And I said, it's $20,000. He called me a crook, and he said, it's $1,100 at Costco. I said, yeah, but it doesn't fit. I said, they're mass producing that. They've got jigs. I need to make it. So I gave him the names of a few other places to call that actually make serpentine doors and wood carving and created. He got the same prices. I got the job. Because he said...
So he questioned you first.
Yeah, he did. He said, how do you go from 1,100 to 20,000? I said, because I'm making one. It's why Rolls Royce is $1 million and a BMW or a Mercedes is, you know, almost a tenth of the price. Not quite, but you know.
Right. So, can I ask a question around that?
One at a time versus...
You triggered something there. Like, what did you do in that scenario, and many others, but what did you do to actually connect with that potential client?
Right? All referral.
No, I get how you came into orbit with them, but you had a human-to-human connection there, right? Where you set the boundaries and expectations. Here's what it is. You want this, and here's why.
Just matter of fact. It was just matter of fact, this is what it's going to take because I'm making one. Did I make any extra money on that? Not really. I worked like hell for that $20,000.
How did you come to that figure?
Just, I know what it took at the time to make.
Based on the skills that are required to
produce. Well, again, as a boat builder, I know what it takes to laminate and curve wood. So it's child's play for me. So I was able to deduce that. And But there's very few firms that will do that these days, or individuals.
What percentage of the market do you think is actually interested in that quality?
Not much in Toronto anymore. In Canada, there's very little.
It's been pushed all out?
Pushed all out. Everything is mass-produced crap still. It's appalling, the architecture these days. I see these basketball players and things with their homes, and there's nothing really created. I don't mean to denigrate anybody, any other craftsman, not at all. It's just that it's...
Are we talking
there's
about
a dumbing down of design, I guess we'd say.
It's almost...
Fiberglass front doors? Are you kidding me? Mm. Like, a stately home needs a wood door. I had a client 25 years ago. I built him a log home. It was a beautiful log home. It was milled logs. It wasn't like hand-hewn. But it was a stately thing, and we did a lot of hand work. Every hand railing and balustrade was spoke-shaved. That kind of really rustic, traditional handwork. And he goes and puts a bloody Stanley steel door on it. I said, you've wrecked this house. You've wrecked the entrance to the house. And he didn't have that on a month before he said, you're right, I need a wooden front door. It's that dumbing down. People say, oh, I need a door, so I better go to Home Depot and buy a door, because they just don't think that you can actually get something made. A lot of people don't think. And Home Depot has ruined that stuff. Again, I sound denigrating to people. Obviously, if you can only afford that, and I'm not a rich man. I mean, far from it. But I get it. If that's all you can afford, fine. But don't build a custom log home and then just cheap out and get the main entrance.
Do you think people think about the other solutions, right? Or are we just so incubated with the data?
I think the majority of the market,
exactly. Right? Yeah. It's just like, just go here because it's off the shelf.
Same with trim. You know, like I can make 5,000 different molding profiles. Anything you want. Like any height, any style, any thickness. You want an 1837 Regency, whatever, no problem.
And now you can get a copy of it in MDF.
No, you can't. You can get similar.
Similar. You can get similar, but it's good enough for that client.
Good enough for that client. And if it's their budget, fine. But what I hate is when people, you know, have ample means and they cheap out on their home. They have a big home, but it's basically a Home Depot home. And all I see is potential. I don't judge anybody. If that's what you want, if you're happy with it, fine. But you have the potential for the same money to have something unique.
Do you think people, I'm wondering how much of the decision making, obviously we know that it's dollar, it's economic.
Sure.
But do we think that a lot of people are making the decision based on where their life is going to be?
Well, expediency too. I just want it done. I hear that a lot.
But whether or not this family is going to be together, whether or not that if we're still going to be sharing this dwelling.
Yeah, I really don't know.
The anticipation of like, I don't think that this man or woman is going to be in my life. So I don't know. I don't know if that's factoring in.
Oh, it could, but that's always a personal circumstance. And don't get me wrong, there's some beautiful homes being built in Toronto that are luxury mansions and things that I would love to be involved with. I can't. Some of them, there's a lot of things made, but I'm talking about the majority of what used to be an expensive home. $1 million home used to be an expensive, you know. 5 years ago, $1 million home was a good home, right? Now, I mean, that gets you nothing, a closet on Danforth. So.
I guess, well, you know the term, mansions, right?
And even to your point, maybe it's not so much the families, but coming back to where you started, is the longevity of buildings, right?
In my father's shop, there was a sign that hung... when we build, we build to last for an eternity.
Oh, that's beautiful.
You know, that's it.
When we build it, let us build it so it lasts for eternity.
Yeah, let us think that we build to last for an eternity.
But how many builders today are doing that?
No.
What percentage?
Well, you know, building code is all chipboard and crap. It's not going. There's not going to be century homes
on these subdivisions. No, I've said it over and over on this show.
The greenest home is a heritage home.
Yes.
Stone foundation, yes. Plaster, wood.
Yes. And yet we don't build to that standard when it comes to green.
We don't, no. And yet they're called green, and they're not. You know, all this.
I've argued over and over.
It used to be Aspenite. What do they call it now? The OSB, the wafer. Well, now
you have Advantex. You have certain products, so they're adding more chemicals to the product. Yeah. But they're adding these chemicals into the product, so then it could be weathered longer.
But we breathe it. It's terrible.
So I'd like to know what's inside of it.
Oh.
It's nice to discover that we got rid of plastic straws for paper straws that have more chemicals in them.
Ah, bingo. Yes, the insanity. But it's the virtue signaling. Oh, look at me, you know.
Now I don't want to use any straws except for metal straws.
I bought grapes for us today in a plastic bag, but I can't get get a plastic bag to put right. them in. Right.
We know that argument. Yeah. We know that argument. We don't understand.
Ever
that.
Try and get into a package of hinges? You know, the plastic wrapping. But you get. But Rona doesn't have a plastic bag to put it in.
Or they'll charge you more for that plastic bag.
It drives me bloody crazy. Yeah. Anyway.
And then the carbon footprint on grocery bags now.
Oh, history will characterize this epic as insane. There's no two.
Why can't we just look back on history and just go back to the way it was? It was being done really well at some point.
There's no money in that.
There's no money to
crank it out.
It's not profitable.
No, it's not profitable. Yeah, no. And there's no living wages. We touched on that earlier. It's not a living wage anymore for people.
It's a wage for living.
It's just it's existing. It's just barely existing for some people, where there used to be so much pride. Nobody can afford the pride because they're working two or three jobs. And I don't know. It's I don't know what to say except that we need to be able to keep some of our money in order to live.
Well, I think we need to keep a lot of our money. I think Canada should be a zero income tax bracket.
Yeah.
But I'm not a politician. I can question.
Well, I wish Mr. Polyevra would address that instead of just cut the carbon tax. No. Get rid of a whole whack of taxes, like a lot of them. We don't need it. We have bureaucrats that are living high on the hog, and they don't produce.
Can we remind everybody what taxes are supposed to be used for?
Well, they were to pay for the First World War.
At the very beginning, but nowadays, what are they supposed to be used for? They're supposed to be used for our.
Well, now they go overseas, unaudited.
That's the other thing.
There's, $5 billion we've sent to Ukraine, I believe. Is it more now?
It's got to be a lot more.
And it's unaudited. I call it money laundering. You could hate me for that, but I just think it's money laundering. I think it's just gone over in a blank check, and where does it go?
We don't see it. And I've seen this by reading it, when you have the president's wife buying a Bugatti for $3.9 million.
Zelensky's wife,
exactly. I don't understand how that happens, and we don't question.
No.
Should we be questioning it?
Of course we can, but our politicians...
don't allow us to question it.
His Majesty's loyal opposition is supposed to question that, and they don't. They're in collusion. And where's the money going? Right?
And then you strip it down to society, and we're now... suppressed to even think, right? It's shoved down your throat. This is what you're, how you're supposed to react.
Well, look at Instagram. You can't say anything that questions the narrative without being, you know, fact checked to death by. They're not facts. They're just suppression.
Yeah.
You know? Who said that if you cut out a man's tongue, you're not, so much as denying what he's saying is that you're afraid of what he's saying.
Mm.
Nobody wants to hear the truth.
No. Well, a lot of people want to hear it, but the powers that be don't want to hear it. So it just comes down to philosophy of freedom. You know, we are freedoms aren't rights that come from a government. We're inherently free. We're born free. We don't need a document to say that we are free. Mm. Who makes somebody more free or privileged than anybody else? So, and I am a ardent capitalist and entrepreneur. I want everybody to be able to have the same opportunity. We're equal, but we don't have the same opportunities. We're equal opportunities. Some people are born. If my father, for example, didn't happen to have a business, I don't know what I'd be doing. I was able to walk into that and to learn his craft, and I'm blessed, and I'm humbled by that. I am the lucky one. I've won the lottery of life. I didn't have to go out and make my way. I was able to... learn from him, and I chose to learn from him, and I chose to learn that craft, and I worked hard at it, and I've failed more times than I care to remember, but every failure is a lesson. But I am blessed. I get it. If I had grown up and didn't have that opportunity, I don't know what I'd be doing. Would I be a salesman at a big box store? I don't know. Very humbled. I am lucky. I've won the lottery of life.
You know, there's passion that resonates out of you when you talk about that journey.
My heart aches for the generation now that doesn't seem to have any hope. And you see it all the time in trades, course. All of you. You see it in every, not just trades, but I say trades, anything in life. You know, it could be the chef, it could be the cook.
It's careers.
Anything, any career. It's hopeless. It's hopeless for the young people that say, oh, great, you know, I got a job, $25 an hour. Wonderful. So I'm taking home $3,000 a month. My rent and hydro and phone bill is $3,000. So what do... There's no hope. It's awful.
What do you have left over to live?
You don't. You're not even existing. Yeah. And we've seen tent cities. We've seen the homeless everywhere. These people are not all drug addicts, as some politicians would say. They have
they're
no
the
hope.
Elderly. They're the young. They're the people who just couldn't survive financially.
And MPs' pensions are more are disgusting compared to what they give old people. Yeah. And why are old people who have paid taxes their whole life, why are they so penalized? And property tax is another thing, you know. Just because your next door neighbor builds a $3 million home, your taxes shouldn't go up because that's the new value of the neighborhood. No, not at all. It's outrageous.
They've gotten out of hand with taxes.
More corruption. Country. There's many cottages around here, been in the family for a century. They're not rich people. But because the values have gone up, they can't afford to keep the cottages.
Mm.
Because somebody else built a
multi-million
dollar.
Or pass it on to somebody else.
They can't, no.
They can't do any of that.
So somebody with lots of money comes along and buys the land just because the family can't afford to keep it. The only time you should pay the value is when you sell the place. If your little old cottage on an island or your home anywhere is paid for, you shouldn't have to pay higher property tax just because the neighbor's increasing in value, the neighborhood. That's my philosophy at any rate. It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't.
It drives people out of their home.
And then it destroys the heritage because people are going to come in and tear down this old century home.
Yep, absolutely. And build something new.
Safety Corner, your weekly guide to safer construction. Introducing Safety Corner, the latest must-watch show from the creators of The Construction Life. Co-hosted by safety expert Philip Farrar and powered by his S1 Safety Division, this 30-minute weekly series cuts through the noise to bring you real footage and raw insights from actual job sites. No fluff, just hard-hitting analysis, and Philip and myself break down what went right, what went wrong, and what could have gone catastrophically wrong. Each week, we tackle the biggest safety issues facing the industry today, sharing the knowledge every tradesperson needs to make it home safe. Whether you're on the job or managing the site, Safety Corner is here to help you build smarter, safer, and better. Tune in to revolutionize the way you approach safety on the job. Catch Safety Corner weekly because safety isn't just important, it's essential.
No. Do you find it difficult, John, to find these clients that appreciate?
Absolutely, yeah. I just do what I can. I'm not super busy like I'd like to be with these clients because there's a decline in taste overall, as I say. People want expediency. And the only thing I can do is make things that don't exist that I tell people. If you want something that already exists, you don't need me. If you want it made, then I can help you.
So how often do you say no versus how you say yes?
Oh,
90-10 split?
I would say that, yeah.
Yeah.
10 times out of 12, I have to say, I can't help you. I have to walk away.
But they found you for a reason.
Yeah, because they need it made. They need it made. There's a prominent designer in Toronto that hired me to make their front door because they're on a heritage designated property, and like you can't buy a door that fits in there. They have to have the same wooden door made to that style because it's designated, and that's what it has to be. That limits your market. It's not a mass production market for me, but I enjoy it. That's it.
So it's all restoration work. It's all
reproduction or restoring. A lot of restoring. I'm privileged to work all over this province on much restoration. To try and preserve what we have for the next generation to enjoy.
So hang on a second. Well, you've worked in a boatload of different places. Can you identify one or two or three sort of projects that make you smile every time you think about them? It just sort of resonate, like this is going to be around for the next 100+ years.
There's something I probably made $20 an hour on, and I worked 9 months, but it was a joy. And I've got photographs of it somewhere. A client wanted a reproduction of an English Elizabethan dining table, and it was four carved lions rampant.
Okay.
And I carved that. And I said, you need $250,000. And it's going to take me this time. He got his calculator out and he played around with it. He said, I got $86,000. Do what you can.
What did you
I do? Gave him the same damn thing that I was going to do for full rate. but I did it for my happiness. And it sits in his home, and I've got pictures of it. I've got the client's name, and you know, I don't know if he wants that out there, but he's a prominent industrialist, and he loves that table. But I gave him the same thing because I thought, this is a legacy piece.
Yeah.
And I signed the bottom, and I made it. I got carpal tunnel syndrome because I had a two-pound mallet and a chisel in white oak for months after months. I had to take a break and have surgery because it was just, I almost crushed my kids some days after a day of pounding a mallet because you'd walk in and hug them. You know, you don't know your own strength, right? You grab a teacup and it crushes. But that's the kind of thing I really enjoyed, yeah.
And you just touched on something. And the word legacy came up. Mm. And this really struck a chord with me because earlier today we were talking about end of life.
Yeah.
Death.
And I know I'm on my way out. I'm not, I don't have, you know, 50 years ahead of me. Well, it's just a fact of life. You deal with it.
So how, you know, and then you talk about legacy. And is this something that is, in your opinion, thought about, not thought about enough? Is it, like, what's your thoughts on doing the work for a specific reason? You talked about the legacy you want to leave behind. Does it exist? Do people think about, how do I want to be remembered when I'm not here?
I don't think many people think like that. They live for the moment for whatever reason. A lot of people tend to be shallow. A lot of people want friends and no enemies, so those are the people I tend to avoid. I have a very small circle, but you know, people that are deep thinkers think about legacy.
I think there's a moment in, and I'm going to talk about tradespeople, because early in my days, I worked on older homes, and I was fascinated by the fact that you can demolish a section of it and rediscover the craftsmanship that was put at that time. Exactly. Whether it was 100 years ago, you discovered how it was made.
Mm.
Yeah. And I go back to there's a moment in a tradesperson's life where you have to decide whether you want to keep your soul or lose your soul.
Ooh.
Bingo.
And I think it's designed because people will look at it like, I'll make $1,000 if I just shut up, quash my soul, and just build it. Versus, and I know I've been in that situation where you had that door, you're connected to it.
Mm.
And you wanted to build it, and I've done it. I've built several things where I didn't make any money off of it. I didn't survive it. I basically put money into it, mm-hmm. but I did not kill my soul as a result of it. Exactly. I was proud of it, and I know it's still there to this day.
But this is what's been lost. This is what's been lost. The heart and soul.
There's a moment. There's a moment in a trades. Every tradesperson's life, they decide. Mm-hmm. They decide whether this is just about making money.
Well, let's say artisan. Could be any. Artisan. It could be in any yes. medium. It yes. could be a house painter. 100%. It could be a portrait painter. Yes. It could be a jewelry maker. It could be any not just trades, but the craft we're talking yes. about. Anybody that creates something.
Yes.
Could be a writer too, right?
Sure. Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of people.
You can give in and just do what they ask and get paid for it. And it applies to anything that works with your hands.
Yeah.
And for some people, they're fine with it. I've never been fine with it, but all it does is create friction with clients. They hire you, they find you, they choose you, they want you because of what you've done in the past and how you've spoken about the details that are associated with it. But yet, when the money, the budget is getting out of hand, they beg you to compromise.
Oh, every time. And some people lose heart, and that's what bothers me. I put a post on Instagram a number of years ago about that, losing heart and whether or not you put your soul into it. And Georges Bizet, one of the greatest operatic composers ever, and you would know his music if you hear it. It's in movies, it's in everything.
Sure.
He died young, basically, of a broken heart because his music was criticized. He was pilloried. He wrote The Pearl Fishers and Carmen, which are the two most played pieces in the operatic repertoire on the planet. In his lifetime, the critics pilloried him. He died very young, thought he was a failure. He was just ahead of his time. So you can't let it get to you. You have to rise above it and just be authentic. Had he had the physical courage and mental courage to persevere, he would have buried his critics. Because now we don't know who his critics are. They're dead. But we know Georges Bizet.
Do you think today with social media it's the equivalent of back then when you had that small circle that once you were attacked?
Look at the critics on social
media. I know. It's very similar.
It can destroy somebody.
You've never met these people. You don't know what they look like. But yet they have free range to just decide, like dissect you, rip you apart, and dismiss everything that you've done beforehand because you disagree with something that they've said, done, mm-hmm. or built.
Or they don't like what you design.
But you never met this person. Well, can we, like, I'd love to go back to a day where, tell it to my face. Mm. And I think 99.9% of the people will never say it, a word to your face.
Well, even in Bizet's day, you know, 19th century France, that was still newsprint. I mean, newspapers were devastating, right? Critics. Critic hated you, you were done. That was it. But where the, we don't remember the names of the critics, right?
No, and it's all misunderstood information because if somebody dug into said, you know, talk to me about your post might mean something or might mean nothing, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. But all of a sudden it's criticized and ripped apart and, yeah. right?
But it comes down to having the personal courage and to, I mean, he was a genius. He created music that we still listen to today. We love it. It's in movies like constantly, his pieces, and yet he didn't have the fortitude to carry on. So that's sad. I mean, so there is a passion, but it gets back to that horseshoe making thing. You know, if you want to make horseshoes, you're an idiot. You won't survive unless you're going to make the best horseshoes for the King's Plate, for all the wealthy people, because that is the sport of kings. That is the very wealthy. There's a few places around here that have equestrian stables, and they've tons of money, and they will buy the best. So that's what you have to focus on. But as I say, if you want to sit in downtown Toronto in your condominium and make horseshoes, you're going to be a failure.
Do you get frustrated about all those towers that are being built? I got such.
Oh, of course I
got so frustrated when City Place started announcing, and when they were looking at 21, 22 towers, whatever it was, coming off of Spadina.
I don't
appreciate a single one of those towers.
I've renovated condos in there. It's outrageous.
I don't understand.
No parking.
There's no parking. But it's not even, it's just the aesthetic, the architectural aesthetic and the layout.
There is no architectural
aesthetic. That's what I mean. There's nothing there.
So what I do in those interiors is to accept the fact that it's a box. But you recreate a Parisian flat or a Georgian interior. You can put paneling. You can add beautiful flooring. You can create artwork. So there's lots you can do with it, but most people can't see past that. You know, they buy the 100 Douglas blinds or whatever, nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying they all look the same after a while. You know, have drapery made. You know, on this humble boat, there's drapery made.
Why are we so afraid to be individual?
Very much so. People are terrified of authenticity.
Why?
99% of critics, my clients say, well, will my neighbors like it? Or they might think I'm putting on airs.
They might think...
It's that whole thing of nobody wants you to appear to be better than them. You know, you have to all wear the current fashion, right? We all have to wear the same things. I don't have
same
anybody's
brand,
label
logos.
On
I know,
here,
yeah.
You know. You know, I jokingly walk up to people and say, hi, Tommy, because they got Tommy all over their shirt. You know, like, okay, why? Like, hello? Like, my name's not Tommy. Well, then why are you wearing Tommy?
What is that quote from Heath Ledger where he was talking about, why is everybody so critical? They're only interested in asking what you do for a living, where you live, and what you own. They never ask you how you are.
Exactly. Ooh. Exactly. Absolutely right.
Because how you are is a reflection of who you really are. But everybody's curious about what your job is, how much money you're making, and where you live.
Well, they want to know if you're important enough
to
know.
It's a world
the
of labels.
Yes.
How are we labeling you? How am I classifying you? Where do I fit in this socioeconomic conversation?
But the same thing comes in construction.
Absolutely.
When you choose a Wolf range, when you choose a specific brand product, and it...
Has to be the latest and the greatest.
Yes.
Or even before that. There's even the folks doing the work. It comes before that. I don't want to talk to the electrician. I want to talk to the foreman. I want to talk to the project manager. I want to talk to the boss. I want to buy this. I want to do this. Right? So.
I have a dear old client. He's a billionaire and a noted philanthropist in this country. And I say that only because I want you to know that he is legacy money. He's like fifth generation, old money. He knows things. He understands and appreciates the philosophy of preserving what we have for the next generation to enjoy. He referred me to a neighbor. I was building his kitchen and renovating his interior, and he wanted it made. His neighbor, who I'd never met, kept trying to get me over there to build the same thing, hounding him to death, and I never met the man. And finally, my client said, can you just go over there and talk to him because he's bugging me? I went over there, there was 10 trucks in the way. I had to grab whatever piece of crack truck was there just to borrow one because it was the 10th one out, the last one in the driveway. I get in this rickety old thing. I drive over. I'm covered in mud and crap. And I had told him I'm coming over. So that's fine. I look like hell because I actually had to examine the foundation of this home. So I was a mess. I said, I'll pop over and have a look. I showed up to this guy's house. Talk about shallow. He answers the door, looks at me up and down, and says, get out. I've got somebody important coming here.
Wow, 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 wow.
And I said, well, I don't care who you are, he said. He cut me right off. He said, get your piece of crap thing out of there. I've got an important designer coming here.
Wow.
I said, I am John LeBlanc. Lewis just sent me over. We're done. He's like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know. Comes down to that whole thing. How you treat the waiter is what identifies you as an individual.
I've seen clients treat tradespeople poorly right in front of me.
It's disgusting.
It's a...
Oscar Wilde said, we're all in the gutter, but some of us are looking at the stars, right? So, but that sort of thing, it's dehumanizing. It's disgusting. And ironically, when the billionaire came to my studio originally, he was dressed worse than I am, covered in mud. Why? Because he had been in his rose garden, covered in mud. He was planting and playing with his prized roses. And he shows up to my studio. I welcomed him. I didn't, you know, treat him badly. I didn't know who he was. I didn't know how much money he had. I didn't care. He was another human being that came to talk to
me. That's all it takes.
That's it. He had me published. He had me published in Canadian Home Workshop. He was so happy with my work. And Don Ross locally here wrote the article. And I'm just saying, that's humanity. So this billionaire who could buy and sell all of us was more of a human being than his damn neighbor that threw me off his property because I had an old piece of crap truck I was driving. And I looked like hell.
What kind of truck was it?
It was just some staff truck. I don't know. Some of the young kids had a truck, whatever. I don't know. I just grabbed the 10th one that was there because I couldn't get to my vehicle.
Yeah.
You know, when you get a job site, there's so many trucks. Is it, can I just borrow that for 10 minutes? So you're not going to move 10 vehicles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like you just take... Nah. That's camaraderie. My point is that's humanity.
We work together to make it happen.
Humanity is everything.
Feeling the weight of the world on your shoulders? You're not alone. Working in the trades can be tough, long hours, physical demands, and the constant pressure can take a toll on your mental and emotional well-being. It's time to invest in you. Steps to Happiness Coaching offers personalized support to help you manage stress and improve work-life balance, build resilience and overcome challenges, enhance your relationships on and off the job site, and find purpose and satisfaction in your work. Life coach Teresa Greco understands the unique pressures of your world. You'll learn practical tools and strategies to unlock your inner joy. Let her help you build a stronger, happier you. So don't let stress hold you back. Schedule a free consultation today. You deserve to be happy because life is too short to be anything but. Check out Steps to Happiness Coaching at teresagreco.ca or email Teresa at stepstotruehappiness@gmail.com or connect with her on IG at Teresa Greco _ Steps to Happiness or Facebook Steps to Happiness with Teresa Greco. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
So I have a very small circle as a result. Very small circle. Authenticity is everything.
You know, you say a small circle, and it's probably a tremendously important circle because that's what makes you who you are.
Not
important, but important to you because that's makes that you're a product
important
of,
to me.
Of that environment. Important right?
People so much. It's just
they're important to you.
I've seen kids.
And they make you
I've
who you are.
Older, I've
they're
seen authentic. Everybody reveal a great idea. And to me, that's important. I've never looked at your sex, your race.
I've never
questioned it. If someone is the new person, first day, last day, a good idea is a good idea. Contributing is
that's right.
It's craft. It's artisan, right? That's where we're at.
Yeah, we tell people all the time. I don't give a shit about anything else except, you know, can you do the job? Do you have a good idea?
Hire the best person for the job.
Yeah, what do you got to contribute? Can you contribute? Are you the right person? The answer is yes. I don't give a shit about the other parameters.
Is Canada going to be respelled to CANDA E-I? Or D-E-I? Canada Day. Canada Day is what I was trying to get at. C-A-N-D-E-I.
Yeah, diversity, equity,
like, yeah, like, are we going to, is that the next one that's going
to
be planted on us?
It comes down to merit, right? We want the, we want the best people for the job, period. It doesn't matter what it is.
I agree.
But not anymore, though.
Were you like me? Were you cringing when Bombardier got the deal for the streetcars when they were late on everything?
Again, that's just more government corruption.
That's all it is, right? It's they were on the verge of bankrupt. There was a German company that would have done a much better job. They would be out of business without the taxpayer support.
Yeah. And there's a lot of families living high on the hog because of government taxpayer handouts. It's corrupt, it's insanity, and it should not be happening.
Who's your favorite tradesperson? Like trade? What trade are you envious of?
I'm not really. I won't say trade. I will say craft.
Craft.
Okay.
So when I'm, yeah, I mean,
I'll tell you something.
The artisan. I think that a good tradesperson who knows their skill.
And it was very humbling because somebody was heaping praise on me once, but I had made some beautiful circular stairs and a Gothic front door for a church, and they said, "Man, you can do anything you build." I said, "No, I cannot. I cannot build a violin." I could build a violin and it would look beautiful and it was gorgeous carving, but it wouldn't sound very good.
It wouldn't sound great. And that's building.
I cannot do that. And that's humbling because I cannot make a piece of wood sing. Mm. Right? And that's when you realize just how stupid you are and that you don't really know everything. Right? I can make a facsimile of a violin. It could look beautiful, but it would probably sound like hell because I don't know the nuance.
Oh, no, he gives me a signal sometimes.
Sorry about that, yeah. This is getting in the way of my cigar. And anyway, no, but it's the nuances in life. So, no, we can get high on the hog of thinking we can do anything under the sun. We can't.
I think I've seen every single tradesperson impress me to the level of artisan. I can honestly say that I've seen work coming from plumbers, HVAC, trim carpenters, tile setters. They've done little techniques, little crafts, little details that I'm like, you realize that you're an artist, right?
Yeah.
You understand that you're an artist. You're not a tradesperson. You're an artist.
Absolutely. When I was a boy, my father's plumber, everything was copper in those days, and everything was perfect. His soldering joints were perfect. And he stood there one day, and he said, I'm sad that it all has to be covered up. Mm. And I almost laughed, and then I realized, my God, it is art. Every soldering joint is perfect.
Yeah.
Everything's perfect, and it has to be covered up and nobody sees it. That's pride of workmanship, and that's what you just said. That's everybody, if they're good. Yeah, it's,
do you think the trades folks generally realize that they're artists? Do you realize that? Do you
think I think the majority of them think it's just a job.
It's just a job, and it just comes naturally. Well, I don't think anything of it. Well, you know, nice, I'm gonna say electrician, right? Nice pipe work. It's a craft to go into an electrical room with nice pipe work and to see it all tied in together. So folks don't even think about that.
It's a balancing craft, though.
Was it Calvin Coolidge or some, I think, that said every job worth doing is worth doing well.
Yes. Right.
And it's it doesn't matter what it is. I mean, people that denigrate the baker and say, excuse me, are you enjoying that muffin? Are you enjoying that cookie?
Sure.
Oh, they're just a baker. No. You're a multimillionaire, and you're going to that shop and talking down to the baker to get your favorite cookie. Are you stupid? Like, are you stupid? Like, why are you talking down to them when they have created what you covet? Right? Everybody has something to give in some way.
But I find
that put their mind to it.
The industry has a hard time properly pricing their craft.
Yeah.
They don't, in fear of not getting the work.
Of course, absolutely.
At all the time.
Absolutely.
I don't.
Because the competition is out there. There's always somebody to.
But it's not apples and apples.
It's not.
That's the problem.
It is absolutely not.
It has never become an apples and apples bidding process.
It never is, no. I still hand paint our kitchen cabinets because they're going into a home that's hand painted, for example. You know, to see a beautiful spray-painted lacquer kitchen and then it's up against, you know, hand-painted casing, it's like, what's the point? Mm. Why blend it? Make it all the same. That's my philosophy. So it costs more time, but because I use a $100 varnish brush to finish the paint. But I'm just saying that kind of attitude. It's not apples to apples, because some guy just gets the spray gun out, plops it in place, and then it's on a rolled wall or something, and it's incongruous, right? You get a perfect finish here, but then it's around a painted MDF baseboard and casings. And
but where does our client vacation?
Yeah.
So where do they vacation, and what do they stop at? And when they tour, when they go visit locations, when they go eat at restaurants, mm-hmm. when they go visit structures that have been around for centuries.
Oh, they love
and,
that.
And they appreciate, and they touch, and they see all the wear and tear. Exactly. They see the grain. They see all the sanding, all the work, the craftsmanship that was put in there.
And that's what I want in my interiors.
They come home to a pristine, clean, lacquered finish.
White. Generally white. White. A lot of white on Instagram.
Gently
laced. It's soulless. Gently laced. No offense to my dear clients that like gently laced. There's a time and a place for white. I've built white interiors because it's an art gallery.
But what I'm right? fascinated about your work is I see all the darkness, and I still see so much character in the darkness.
I like jewel tones. I like color and character.
I know? Love that.
I like, well, this interior, there's bronzes.
Yes.
My dear fiance, Cheryl, she does, she chose these pillows, and we have the great taste, and the same great taste. In our opinion, it's great taste, because I don't mean great as in it's better than anybody else's. I mean, it's classic. If you stick to natural materials, natural metals, bronzes, gold, silvers, if you stick with natural colors, garnet, ruby, emerald, natural tones, jewel tones, cobalts, that's natural, right?
You can never go wrong.
No. People that go and look at, as you say, beautiful, they go to Venice, and they, oh, look at the colors, look at the murals, look at the, and then they go home to a sanatorium. It's soulless. It's so true. And not a book in the place. Not a book in the place.
So how do we bring
Baldwin, the great decorator in the 40s and 50s and 60s to Hollywood, he said, you know, the best decoration in the world is a room full of books. And I cannot agree more. Mm-hmm. I always like to include a bookcase somewhere, something like that.
There's the other quote where it's, if your TV is larger than your book collection, then you have an issue.
What did I repost the other day about Lamborghinis? We don't advertise.
Oh, yeah, we don't advertise because that's not where our customers are.
On television, because our clients do not watch television.
No. But our clients now are all over Instagram. Our clients are all over social media. So now that's the dictating factor.
Well, up to a point. Up to a point. There's no real great successful people that's going to buy a Lamborghini or generally on... Unless you're a basketball player and you just suddenly get a... So another funny story on that. The Lewis over here that sent me over, that I built the kitchen for, that sent me over to his neighbor that threw me away.
Yeah.
He was hosting a cocktail party for his newly renovated home. And a local NHL hockey player shows up to his cocktail by boat. And he's got a beautiful brand new speedboat, a poker boat. And he looks at this old wooden mahogany gleaming vessel there. And he says, whose is that? And Lewis said, well, that's mine, son. He says, oh, you should have one of these. That's an old boat. Look at this. And he said, well, son, let me tell you. This was made for the King of Sweden in 1938, and it held the world's record at the time as a speedboat. And they don't make that anymore. You can't buy it. Anybody can finance what you have, but you can't buy this. There's only one, and it's got provenance. That's the difference.
How do you bring this back? How do you bring that ideology and that philosophy back into humanity?
Well, get rid of the public education system right off the bat.
I'd get rid of the word education in that phrase.
Well, there's professional educators and then there's teachers. And the two are vastly different.
I could not be a parent today. I'm not a parent, so I don't know. You guys have the challenge.
No doubt.
In the system, the way it's designed.
I struggle with that. I have four kids and I struggled with it. It's mind numbing.
What's the age range there?
29 to 20. Yeah.
But go on.
Four kids.
You know, when you talk about there's the framework there was there's teachers and then there's educators. Mm-hmm. Tell me more. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, a professional educator just goes through the curriculum, marks their time, and does whatever the government tells them. And then there's a teacher. Put it this way, when I was a boy, I struggled with mathematics. I got 27% in grade 8 in mathematics. My father sat me down and he said, okay, son, you can't figure out this Pythagorean theorem. He said, I need to put a ladder up there. There's the wall. And how long a ladder do I need? I had a practical application. I figured it out in a heartbeat. That's a teacher. He didn't just say, like my teacher, professional educator, did say, well, it's right there in black and white. What don't you understand? You know, but my father said, no, no, no. Imagine that part of the triangle is the wall.
It's true.
And that's the floor. And that's the ladder. How long a ladder do I need?
Bingo. And then a light bulb.
And a light bulb. That is a teacher who will work at explaining it to you until you actually understand it. And some people need a practical application. I need a practical application.
Many people.
I have built 40-ton floating boathouses. I do complex mathematics. I do all kinds of things. But I couldn't do it on black and white in an abstract form in school until I had an application.
Then you got it.
Yeah, like I wanted to build floating things and work in boat building and I needed to learn because I wanted to also. But nobody is ever going to learn what they don't want to learn.
Of course not.
Right? You have
to. In fact, it turns them off. And then it's a ripple effect of like,
totally.
You know what? It becomes a loss. And then it's so hard to get that human being back on track to say, well, here's where it comes into play.
When my son graduated, he was 18, got out of high school, I said, did they teach you how to do income tax?
Of course not.
No. What? No. He just taught you how to be a laborer. Just do what you're told. And then they're given a tax form and they're like, oh my God, what the hell is all this? They haven't taught you anything, really. It's disgusting. They learn more from a home life and a family business than anything.
How important is post-education these days?
No, I don't think it's very important unless you need to be a doctor or something.
A specific career.
But, you know, to have a... I don't mean to denigrate anybody. But there are some useless courses out there, or there's a glut of people that really don't have a job to go to, so it shouldn't be offered. You know, if we only need, let's say, 1,000 English majors in this country this year, why are we turning out 10,000? Because there's no job for you. So that's a part of it, but it's that whole system.
Well, the education system.
They got to churn out, just churn them out.
Business in
there's
itself.
A great question, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you just nailed it. If we only need 1,000 people, why are we, taking 10,000 in? Because it's a business. And what happens to the other 9,000 people?
There's a lot of bricks and mortar out there to pay for. Got to pay for that bricks and mortar, right? All the institutions, you just churn them out. It's useless. Right? So that's my attitude. But the fault lies again. It all comes back to government as far as I'm concerned. Every level of government, every form of government, it's just mismanaged.
And Canada's just been quite the fiasco.
Totally.
And status. Like, I think I'm going to throw status in there too because, in my opinion, there's a status of going to a post-secondary college education, come up with letters or degrees or whatever it is, right?
I know lots of people with a degree in psychology that don't have a job.
Yeah.
That never intended to be a psychologist. But it was an easy course, and I got a degree. I won't say easy, forgive me. No, it was easy for them at the time.
What about the argument about you meet certain people that influence the rest of your life going to attend post? So you're surrounded.
Do you? I don't know.
I'm questioning. I just say that argument comes up.
Experience,
yeah. I mean, you meet certain people that will influence the rest of your
days. Well, there's also those who can't.
Yes.
Teach, because they don't.
Yeah.
I had a client that wrote many, many books on how to write a business, how to run a business, and he taught at a higher education how to run a business, and he tried to open two restaurants and failed twice. But he's written books on it, and he lectures on how to run a business, but he's failed twice. It's outrageous.
No, I love
he had all the theory in the world. All the theory in the world.
You needed a ladder and a wall.
Yeah, but, you know, all of a sudden, let's say the chicken that you just got is all rotten and you can't serve it. So, oh, well, there goes that money out the window. That's not in your textbook. That should be an addendum right there. Like, you just lost money before you even opened the doors because everything you bought, the fridge broke. And you've lost everything.
Oh, right? I love how casual you say it because it's like, I don't give a shit how many letters you have after name or how many businesses you think you can run. If you can't run a business, why am I learning from you?
Well, and it comes back to construction. We all know it's going to take me 3 months to build that house. Everything's going to be perfect. There's going to be no problems. Right?
It never happened.
And then it never happened. Yeah. It's rained for 6 weeks
straight. And
whoever's
told you that, yeah.
I had one client with a foundation that just washed in repeatedly. They kept digging and digging, and the rain would come, and it would. They lost 6 weeks of just rain. They lost all their money right there. It just, they had to keep digging out slurry and sludge and slush because of rainfall. That's not in the contract. That's not in the... Client doesn't care. I'm paying you that much money to build the house. Well, guess what? The client's pissed off. The contractor loses money and the job gets hurriedly done because the client isn't smart enough or kind enough to say, damn it, I realize you had to dig that hole out 6 times and...
Are you ready to build a life that's not just fulfilling on the job site, but off the job site too? Welcome to Building Joy, the podcast series from TCL that's all about crafting a brighter, more satisfying existence in every corner of your life. I'm Manny Nevis, the host of the Construction Life TCL podcast, and together with happiness life coach Teresa Greco of the Steps to Happiness, we're laying the blueprint for true happiness. Every episode, we dive into real challenges and opportunities construction workers face in their pursuit for joy. From the long hours and the physical grind to the alliance and pride in the job well done, we're here to show you how to bring more joy into your work, your personal life, and everything in between. Got a story, a question, or just need some advice? We're all ears. Email us at manny@theconstructionlife.com or steps2truehappiness@gmail.com or drop us a message on social media at @TCL_theconstructionlife or @TeresaGreco_steps2happiness. At Building Joy, we know that happiness isn't just a dream. It's something you can build one brick at a time. So tune in, connect with us, and start laying the foundation for a happier, more fulfilled life. After all, the greatest structure you'll ever build is the life you lead. Join us on Building Joy, where we're constructing a better tomorrow, one episode at a time, because life's too short to settle for anything less than joy.
God, here. Oh. But there's the human compassion again, right? It doesn't exist.
No, exactly. People just want a deal.
Yeah. Because they want to go tell their friends and everybody, I got a good deal on this. Mm-hmm. I got a good deal.
Oh, yeah. No. It's.
Is that the second runner-up to it? First, you decide on the brand, the status of what you've created or what you purchased, and the second is what you paid for that status?
Maybe so. I think that human beings innately want to talk to their friends and family about how they got a better deal. I mean, I just think of Italian heritage. I think around sitting around the table. You know, I got this guy who got me a good deal. But
yeah.
And what is the next guy? Well, no, I got a better guy who got me a good deal.
But it's not a radio.
No.
It's or a TV. Like, they think they could, if they save $10 on a TV, fine, it's a commodity. As you say, it's apples to apples. But it's not in the world of created things. The builders, framers, for example, are they putting 2 nails in each one or 3? Like, that's the difference right there.
And there are framers that do that.
Absolutely.
They'll save a box over the course of the wall.
Exactly. And they're just thinking it's great. So who knows? Maybe they've got alimony payments. God knows what it is. Maybe they're alcoholics. I don't know. But
those are the drywallers. Don't worry about that.
Yeah. Oh, don't get me started. Yeah, there's like 4 screws across the 4-foot sheet. It's like, hold the phone here. Yeah. And I don't always have control over those things. If I'm coming in on the finishing stages and I see these things and they're red flags, and I tell the client, you know, you got to do this. And, I got a deal. Like, okay.
Have you gotten clients?
You got a $50,000 Persian rug we're going to drop here, handmade, but, you know, you saved, you know, $1,000 on drywall. Are you stupid?
It's not worth it.
Are you stupid? And then a year later, oh, there's cracks up there. You think there's cracks up there? Yeah, there's cracks up there. Like, oh my God, whatever. The insanity. Pound foolish, penny wise.
Have you had clients ask you to go the old school route, the lime plastering route?
I just did one on the beaches. I'm doing it right now.
Love that. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, because they wanted a little slight texture on the wall that you can only achieve by hand troweling with a pool trowel, you know, with the rounded edges that don't leave a square edge. I just had to do that. I love that. For
those trays are far and few across Canada.
I was just blessed at my point in life to have grown up with plasterers and things. So I don't know how to plaster really well. I couldn't do an entire home, and I wouldn't presume to, but let me do a Venetian plaster wall. Yeah, I can do that once. Even some mural painting or something, I can do that, yeah. I couldn't profess to be really great at it forever, but if you want a certain look and it'll be a unique creation once, yeah, I can do that. It's fun. So I do like that, but I'm not going to presume presume to call myself
no, plasterer. No, 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 but you'll find somebody.
But I've seen it. I grew up with it. I know how they do it. I used to carry stuff for them. I'd mix it for them. I would do all kinds of things. In those days, as I say, growing up in business, and even the way I run my business, you work with people. You all help. That's just what you do. And so, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Who are you seeing, John? Like, today's younger designers, architects, tradespeople that are impressing you? Or is the list very short?
The list is very short. And again, I don't want to mention names for...
Okay.
Out of respect, too, because we all have our art.
Of course.
There's a few really good designers that I respect, but I find the facsimiles of classic architecture. Again, the everything precast, everything done, so it looks like a beautiful stone, or it looks like it's got the look of something that's classic, but it's all CNC. It's too perfect. Mm.
There's no character to it.
It's too perfect.
Yeah, I've seen it before.
And slabs of MDF everywhere painted. Like, come on. Like, intricately carved. Oh, the CNC carving machines drive me nuts, too, because, you know, beautiful carving. But it still lacks the depth that you can only achieve with a gouge by hand. The undercutting and all that stuff that you can... Who's going to reproduce, you know, a stone cherub on a church or something? Like, CNC machine can't.
I don't think this... Interesting that you brought this up, especially church. There's a church being built close to where we live, and it's gone up rather fast. And every time we drive by, our children are saying, "How's it going up so fast?" Mm. It's a timber structure. The other day, I drove by, and from a distance, driving up, it looks like the stonework's all done. Right? Like, wow, I don't remember seeing the scaffolds go up, and it was pretty quick. You get closer. It's precast.
Yeah,
it's all precast, right? On a church, to your point, the craftsmanship is lost.
Well, I spent a lifetime studying sacred architecture. What we call sacred architecture is just the idea of the... it's nothing to do with religion, per se, but Gothic architecture is called sacred architecture because pi is infinite. It's God's number. Okay. Pi has no end. And that's all based on the circle. Gothic architecture is based on circles. And, what they created, the Chartres Cathedral in 1167, or like all these ancient cathedrals all over Europe, we couldn't do that today. The stone ceilings, vaulted, are you kidding me?
Is it for
vaulted
two reasons why you couldn't stones? Do it today? Because of the artisans?
Lack of artisans. We could do it, but again, they would use all precast things. That's fine. Make it work. But nobody would put the money into it. Because it would cost hundreds of millions of dollars, because it took centuries to build.
There was that church on Parkdale. Was it, I'm trying to think of, King or Queen? It was Queen and Jamison area. There was a church there that burned.
Yes, yes.
What was the church's
name?
Well,
we've lost many churches.
We lost recently, yeah, which is kind of interesting.
A lot of arson, yeah. Obliterate our history.
When they rebuilt it, with fabrication. And I don't even recognize the structure.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate. Because I remember that church.
Should have been reproduced, too. We need stone carvers. We need to preserve the glories of a vanished age for those years which we will not see, right?
Mm.
And we cannot do it. I remember having an academic discussion with some jackass, an Altavall Mandarin, that said, oh, he hopes that the Houses of Parliament burn someday because it's too colonial. Oh, and we would build something new and Canadian. And like, are you kidding me?
What is new and Canadian?
He couldn't define that because I asked him pointed questions. Well, just something that reflects our diversity and everything. No, I'm sorry, but we are a British dominion in part of a worldwide commonwealth.
Yes.
We are a kingdom. We are not a bland republic. I mean, love or hate the monarchy, I don't care. It's who we are as a history. We do have a culture. We do have an architecture. We have Westminster style, like the Houses of Parliament in England. I mean, that's what it's modeled after. That's why we have a Gothic Parliament. That's a philosophy that not everybody would agree with, but I like tradition. Gustav Mahler said that the tradition is not the worship of ashes, it is the preservation of fire.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's about, to me, because nobody knows how to light a fire these days. Right? Is there an app for that?
There's no app for that. There's no Vapa for that.
Put
at
people
all.
Out on a bloody island and say, light a fire, there's no matches, you know? That's the thing. You know? It'll be on YouTube, you know?
Do you think, John, you'd be able to see a difference in Canada before you leave? You think Canada will turn?
I think it's...
For the better.
It's going to take a generation, I think. It's going to take a lot of poor people right now, angry and fed up with the way things are, to make a change. It's going to have to get much worse, I think. Because the parliament lives in a bubble. They're so detached from reality. So detached from reality. Put them on minimum wage, as they say, and see how fast things change.
Mm-hmm.
That's an old saying.
Accountability?
That's an old saying, but it's true. Make them suffer like everybody else suffers and watch how fast things change.
They don't appear to be suffering at all compared to the rest of the citizens of this country. We're not the only ones in that situation as well.
The working poor are poorer than they've ever been. I'm certainly poorer than I've ever been, you know, in terms of work. You know, you have to work so much harder to... And the clock is ticking, right? Like, how long can I keep carrying on? I keep fit every day. I'm fine. I work hard, and that's good, but bloody hell. I mean, yeah, when I'm 80, I probably can't do the same thing. Who knows? We'll see. But people are going to have to get really angry and make a political change. Big time.
You think the younger generation has it in them?
It's amazing what hungry people will do.
True.
All of a sudden, people get angry enough, and they become revolutionaries. And generally, governments drive them to that. And it's a terrible thing to say. But, I mean, the French monarchy, the most powerful army in Europe, on the continent, and I don't include England as Europe, because England is its own country, but on the continent, I mean, the French Revolution, they guillotined their king and Marie Antoinette. Did they get anything better as a result? No.
No.
No, they got another corrupt republic. But people got angry, and at the end of the day, it just comes down to attrition. You don't have enough police. You don't have enough army, because... I remember a wartime story, and you must remember my family steeped in the war because we... His upbringing, you know, my father was grateful to survive the war, but... Churchill said something to a housewife one day. He was touring the coast. And my father relayed this, and my uncle was a king's messenger during the war, which is a fancy term for a spy. Mm. But Churchill was touring the coast, and all the men were off fighting, and a housewife said to him, like, what do we do if the Germans land here? What can we do? He said, you've got a kitchen knife, don't you? You can always take one with you. Attrition. If everybody just fights back one at a time, and I'm not calling for a revolution, I'm saying governments will drive a people throughout history. It's this historical fact. Governments will drive a people to rebellion.
Of course they will.
The cities are everywhere in decline. Trade, industry, agriculture all bend under the weight of taxation right now. Everything. Everything is just bending under the weight. It's unsustainable. And yet there is an elite that lives above it and profits more. And the greatest transfer of wealth, again, happened in 2020. We lost private businesses, we lost restaurants, and where did it go? Walmart stayed open.
Yep.
Costco stayed open.
Essential services.
But couldn't go to a restaurant.
No, you couldn't.
But you could go to McDonald's.
Yeah.
So things like that. People are being driven to the point of no return, and they will be called... All kinds of names that, you know, you're rebellious, or you're a threat to the government. But no, we're just trying to live.
If the government is a threat to us,
you're starving people to death. And I beg Parliament to really think about this and get rid of this weight that's crushing everybody, so that there's hope. We were the greatest imperial power in the history of the world. We were the country that went to Normandy. We were the country that the Germans feared and the Nazis in the Second World War. I mean, and now we're not even allowed to raise our voice because it's offensive to somebody.
How do you think we educate people around this? Like,
forgive the sermon. But
no,
it's not a sermon at all.
It's beautiful because you keep bringing this back up and the role that history plays
study history, study history. In history lie all the lessons of the future. Mm. Period. That's it. It's all there. It just repeats. That's all I can say. I'm not an educated man that way, but I have read voraciously in my father's great library since I was a boy, and I read and read and read, and it's all there, black and white. You know, it's just...
Sometimes we live in a culture, though, where it's like...
They suppress that.
Yeah, they suppress that, and they think, oh, I'm going to rewrite history. I'm going to shift the way history was... Are we? Yeah. Listen, folks, like, how deep do you want to go? There's different layers.
Churchill tried again... 1946, in his famous Iron Curtain speech, he said, you know, what was the point of the Second World War? What is the point of the United Nations organization? He said, to give security to these countless homes, they must be shielded from the two gaunt marauders, war and tyranny. We all know, those of us that have seen active service, we all know the frightful disturbance that occurs when the ordinary family is plunged into darkness and despair. The awful ruin of Europe, with all its vanished glories, and of large parts of Asia, stared us in the eye after the Second World War. And he said, when the designs of wicked men, or the aggressive urge of mighty states, dissolve over large areas, the frame of civilized society, humble folk are confronted with difficulties with which they cannot cope. For them, all is distorted, all is broken, all is even ground to pulp. When we sit here this quiet afternoon, we have to shudder to visualize what millions are going through in fear of famine and war and tyranny, because there is war, and war is on our doorstep. But that's a great lesson that he spoke of. And we have to learn from that. Otherwise, what is the point? What was the point of the Second World War? What's the point of the United Nations? What is the point of having all these liberties? And the Nuremberg Code, which was overthrown during COVID, where you're not allowed to experiment on a human body and force people to accept medical procedures.
That's exactly what they did.
Mm-hmm. And that, all of it. It's just history repeating. I don't know what else to say about it, but you study history, and that's one thing they don't choose to teach.
No, it's not even recommended to study history. And then if you do study history, it's...
Well, people think it's the recitation of dates. It's not. I have to study history. If I want a period interior, for example, I look at old paintings. Mm-hmm. Ah, that's the color they used. Look at that goblet. Look at that table. Look at the drapery. I want to recreate that. So it's relevant to the visual arts, but it's also relevant to the philosophy of life. But that touches on our earlier discussion, too, of we're being pushed and pushed and pushed to starvation. When people are hungry, oh boy, then you've got a tinderbox. And I fear that more than anything. I fear the tinderbox of what this country could become. And our civilization, too, not just this country, but the whole of Western Europe. Culture being suppressed. I had some jackass tell me, well, we don't have a culture here. Are you kidding me? What's Magna Carta? What's our architecture? What's democracy? That's our culture.
Was he a Canadian?
Yeah. No, not at all. He was a newly arrived Canadian, shall we say.
Got it.
Just
upset.
Said we don't have a culture. I said, our culture stands in Italy as the Colosseum. It's the Acropolis. It's, you know, British architecture or the federal architecture in the States, the White House, that's Roman and Greek. Mm-hmm. Come on. I mean, Parliament, that's Gothic. That's our culture. Don't tell me we don't have a culture. Oh, you're just a melting pot. No, we're not. No. We have a very distinct...
We were powerful. On track. It was on track.
The greatest imperial power in history. To this day, our Commonwealth is a third of the globe. India is the largest democracy on the planet and an ally, and our staunch ally against China. China is terrified of India. There's 1.1 billion people there, 1.1 billion in India, that is the only army on the planet that can withstand the tyranny of China, man for man. And it is the world's largest democracy with English as an official language. We have a culture. We have an association. We are powerful. If we choose to exert it, and we have exerted it for good, people will focus on the bad little things that, oh, you know, well, you had slaves or something. Oh, my God. Well, no, we didn't. We abolished it in the British Empire in 1833. The Americans fought a civil war over it in the 1860s. We led the way. I don't know. It just comes down to the philosophy of our way of life is a great culture, and I think it's worth preserving and promoting because it is a free culture. I mean, the Second World War and the First World War proves that. I mean, we fought with our allies. I mean, India put in 2 million of men in the British Imperial armies in the last war. 2 million! Like, come on. We were a United Nations before there was a United Nations. We still have the potential for that. So we do have a great culture. It's a shared tradition of democracy. And I love this country. I don't like the government, but I love this country. And I think we all like the freedom to express. Because without freedom, we cannot do what we do as artisans. You cannot be here as great sound mixers, and I applaud you and your cameramen. My God, you have talents that I could never have. But it's all free creation of art. And we need a civilization that supports that, not suppresses it. Because pretty soon it'll just be, well, imagine if this was, for example, CBC or something doing it. There would be probably 50 people here to do what you're doing, and it would be $500,000 setup, and there'd be hotels, and there'd be...
the removal of the flag and no cigars.
Oh, yes, there'd be no cigars. There would be... Yes, exactly.
It'd be interruption after interruption of things that could or not.
Be would. Edited 10 ways to Sunday. Yeah. Either way, sorry, I'm rambling on again. No, but that's
this
just
is what we're here
what
for.
I
this is the, this is the stuff that folks don't, you know, a lot of people don't talk about.
No.
Do you get into the commercial world, John?
Yeah, I've designed and
you've designed restaurants
built
or
about 44, 45 takeouts and restaurants and things like that.
You prefer?
No, as long as it's unique, that's all.
Mm-hmm. I find that there's a lot more creative freedom when it comes to a commercial application.
Yeah, a lot of budget restrictions too, though. So it makes you think more about how to expand that budget. You know, how to capitalize on it, how to make every penny count. And we end up, as every designer and every builder does, you end up putting more into it than you get out because you care about it, right? You want it to look good, especially in a public place. You want it to look good.
Sure.
You want it to look really good because people are going to see that. More so than in a private home. Does that make sense?
Like no, it makes 100% sense, but I guess the private home only has social media for its exposure.
Yeah,
versus an actual commercial place, whether it's a restaurant, whether it's a hotel. Or
Well, and restaurants have gone to hell these days, the bland homogeneity of everything.
That's where I was headed with. I just sometimes I get invited to openings and I look at them.
It's just outrageous.
And I just like, I don't understand why everybody's very complimentary of what I'm seeing here because there isn't a single thing to compliment.
Yeah. There's a chap in Ottawa that consulted with me ages ago. He bought an old bank, and he said, what would I do in here for a restaurant? I said, don't touch anything. You've got stone pilasters.
Yes.
Just put in tables and chairs, and you don't need me for anything. Just keep it.
Did he?
He did.
Good. Yeah.
Stunning. So that's what I'm talking about.
Enjoy a meal and appreciate
it. And you look at stone pilasters and crown molding, but it's all stone, and everything's beautiful. And
you approach it from a legacy standpoint. You didn't come in and look at how can I make a sale here and tell this guy everything.
No, not at all.
You just said, look, let's restore, let's appreciate this and keep the integrity of it. And this is what I'm going to do.
Well, I've sat on, I think, 3 different municipal heritage committees. I've been involved with the organizing Ontario Heritage Conference for the municipalities. I was fundraiser for it. In that capacity, I was invited into the Royal York when they were about to demolish the beautiful double helix staircase that was in there and destroy that interior. Nothing could be done about it, but we tried to preserve it. They blasted it all out. I've got it on video. They jackhammered it all. Do you remember the double helix staircase in the Royal York? It's gone now. They've put in oversized furniture. They've put in furniture that doesn't even remotely blend with the majesty of that building. And it was out of a New York design firm that wasn't attached to Toronto. Why are you doing that? Why didn't you get...
I have an issue with that.
A Toronto to preserve, and they did the same thing in the Chateau Laurier.
I have an issue
in Ottawa. They just, it's destroyed things. Have a local empathy.
Were you a fan of the Crystal?
Crystal?
The Rom.
Oh, no, no, God, no, not at all. Sorry, that thing. No, no, not at all. No, no.
It was a beautiful building.
No. And I do Lewis Samuel very well. He endows the Samuel wing of the Royal Ontario Museum. I built things for him. I love his philosophy, but that had nothing to do with him, unfortunately. Like, it was just a wing of the overall ROM. But I think it's disgusting. It doesn't blend. Looks like hell, at any rate. But that's just me. And I don't want to be... I don't want to be somebody to say, oh, it's new, therefore I don't like it. That's not it.
That's not what it is.
It has to be sympathetic.
Yes.
I like to make an addition look like it was never added on.
Yes. And it should be built that way.
Exactly. I need another cigar.